From the basement studios of the Atlantic Voice, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion. This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. This is part two of our James Bond special. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Last episode, we were putting together our perfect James Bond movie, and we discussed different actors. We came up with a name, which I think was Falls.
We could change it to Follows.
But we can change it to Follows.
Better.
We spent a lot of time discussing James Bond title songs. I guess now we actually have to get around to putting people into our movie.
A plot? Or just more casting?
Well, let's do some more casting. Is fine. We can figure out what to do with them later.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you need an exciting pre-credit sequence. I do know my favorite from all the James Bonds. It's iconic. It's a Roger Moore movie. He goes off the edge of the cliff. Whoomp, his parachute opens.
Oh, yeah.
Union Jack parachute.
Union
so
Jack,
iconic
right.
That even the Queen ripped him off at the Olympics.
Well, she owns everything, so she can just take that. I don't think intellectual property laws apply to her.
She is James Bond's ultimate employer.
That's right.
I really like the car chase at the start of Quantum of Solace. I thought that was exciting.
Yeah.
I don't know. We can put something in there, but obviously we need some people in our James Bond.
I love a good car chase, so I think we'll go with car chase.
You want to go with the car
chase?
Maybe
a car chase to a parachute. You know,
the car, and then he escapes from the car with his parachute.
I was thinking, actually, this is totally coming off the top of my head. I think it was one of the Pierce Brosnan ones where they're pushing the cars out the back of the plane towards the end.
Yes.
And they go out in a helicopter, which, for the moment here, let's talk about how absurd it is that a helicopter is going to fall from, 20,000 feet up and then start the engine up and just hover above the ground as it's going down. But I was thinking to myself, if you had a drag strip car, like a car that has the parachute that goes
out the back.
This is an American sport, the drag strip kind of thing, where the parachute, if you had that and then the parachute could... obviously, a real parachute is not that they use for these cars is not good enough, big enough to hold a car up in the air. But that could be a plot, a good opening where the car goes off somewhere and the parachute comes out the back because it was a funny car from the drag strip or something like
okay.
that.
Okay. All right, so James Bond ends up in funny cars.
Yeah, all right.
I'm up for anything. We need to put some villains in our Forever Never Falls.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the villain... There are certain characters that are clearly very important for James Bond movies. M, Q,
sure.
Whoever else has a letter, Moneypenny, the girls, which I'm sure we'll
sure,
get to.
Yeah.
But we need a villain. Do you have anyone in mind for your villain?
Well, we were talking before about... Do we want to pick a character from the existing ones?
Let me say this about... And those of you that listened to our last podcast will know I'm a James Bond fanatic. So I have very strong opinions. I know these movies insides and out. I have an opinion. I don't find any of the James Bond villains very threatening. The ones in the movies that we've had.
No,
I think of other cinematic villains.
The fact that they're planning to blow up the world, you don't find that very threatening?
Well, no, I don't find them threatening. Like Hannibal Lecter is threatening. All the villains from the Die Hard movies... Alan Rickman in the very first Die Hard,
sure.
He seemed kind of evil. Rosanna made a list of James Bond villains. Goldfinger, yes, I know he wants to be very rich and he's killing people, but he's ultimately a jolly fat man that plays golf. Casino Royale, the guy's a poker player.
Mm-hmm.
I watch World Series of Poker on TV. I'm not threatened by any of those guys. Let me see.
I mean, Blofeld is, in his various incarnations, he's, of course, been played by a number of different
actors. Which, again, sort of hurts it for me.
Yeah. But I think the problem is, and not to step on your plan about sort of stuff, but I'm sure you will jump back in when it comes appropriate. I think the problem with the main villains in those is they have to be the head of their criminal enterprise.
Okay.
In order to really be like, oh, it's this dangerous, it has to be the person who's the main person. And the main person is not likely to be a man of action or woman of action, where they're going around and getting in the hand-to-hand combat. So almost all of them have this sort of, they're sitting there, and yet they have to, and for the movie purposes, they have to put them into a personal conflict situation. And it's never like, that guy could catch me if I ran away. They're not very mobile because they're supposed to be more of like an elder statesman of their criminal enterprise, which is why I think you get the funny bits where, they hold James Bond on the laser table, and they're going to cut through him and things like that. And that's the way to do it because you couldn't have a fist fight really between the two of them and really believe that the doughy guy with the white furry cat is going to beat James
exactly,
Bond.
Exactly, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially because he's already lost to him at golf. Maybe they could have like a dominoes face-off
where
they play dominoes to see who would be the... No, I just feel there was the one movie from the 60s where the guy has an eye patch. Now, He's got an eye patch. So at some level, he seems pretty mean. Now, I know that. Now, I know. I know that the eye patch has been sent up by the Austin Powers movie with, I think it was Robert Wagner played number two. And he had an eye patch. But even though he had a joke name, I still thought at some level that even in a comedic movie, he was a legitimate villain. I look at those pirate movies. Pirates all have eye patches. Even the ones that can see probably put on an eye patch because it made them more threatening when they were out on the ocean doing their buccaneering thing.
If nothing else, their lack of depth perception would come make them a dangerous shipfaring person.
Dr. No had metal hands.
Yeah,
that's okay, cool. That's threatening. But too many of these guys, they just... Yeah.
Well, that's why they need henchmen, right?
Okay, henchmen I'll give you that. Scary,
you know, Odd Job and Jaws. And...
All right, so here's our choice. Do we want to have a corporate type villain with a henchman, or do we want our main villain to be someone who can physically go one-on-one with Sean Connery?
You know, you could have your cake and eat it too in some cases. I mean, I don't know who you're thinking about in terms of characters. And again, this one might be one that unfortunately is informed by his role in Batman, but I thought Liam Neeson would make a good bad guy character.
I think he would make a good bad guy.
And he is both physically menacing and has enough gravitas to him that he can seem like the leader of a nefarious enterprise.
I remember in our last podcast, we talked about people who would be good James Bonds. And I remember we threw around a couple of names. And I think if one of them was correct, it was Eric Banner.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was a villain in the Star Trek reboot from a couple of years
ago. That's true. A lot of makeup.
He was physical. He was mean. You know, you sort of felt like if he had to go one-on-one with Captain Kirk, we'd have a bruising moment. So I think I would like someone like that who I feel is physically James Bond's equal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want another sort of old guy in a safari suit.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I love The Henchman, I love Odd Job, and I love Jaws, but I want the main villain to be someone who I feel can go toe-to-toe with James Bond physically.
All right.
And so I'm sure there are people out there. I'm trying to think of, you know, I think someone like Tom Cruise would actually make a pretty good scene-chewing villain. When Tom Cruise has played a meanie in movies, he's been very mean. I don't know if you've ever seen a film called Magnolia, where he plays a Tony Robbins-type inspirational speaker, and his character is kind of a son of a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Cruise was terrific. And I remember thinking, he needs to do more movies like this, where he gets to be the bad guy, because there was an edge to him. You know. But I'd like to see someone like that sort of play out of type.
I can see that. I mean, and I was thinking about casting against type. This doesn't fit your bill of being physical, but I thought Morgan Freeman. Here's a guy who plays, you know, almost all the time playing a nice guy, but there are some certain scenes where you can see where he has some sort of menace to him.
I would buy that role.
Now, he's not going to be the physical.
No.
Maybe he could. I thought of Denzel Washington, who's got a lot
of... I think Denzel Washington would be very... I think he's someone who'd be a good James Bond.
You know, if you see him in Training Day and the more recent movie where he's another bad guy along the same lines, but he would...
American Gangster.
Mm-hmm.
American Gangster. Yeah, I just feel that one of the biggest weaknesses of the James Bond movies is that the villains, they've never seemed very villainous. And I know when a series has had 22 episodes, it's not like James Bond's not going to win. But I just feel I'd like to see more of a real threat. And I've never really felt like he's ever on the back foot.
You want to feel like you'd have to run away. Now, of course, in terms of gender equality, we did some Jane Bonds. Can you think of any female arch villains? I thought of Cate Blanchett.
She would
play
be
as intense. She played a bit of a villain, more of a governmental villain in Hannah. I don't know if you saw Hannah.
No,
that was with Eric Bana also. You know, tying them all together. But she played somebody who seemed pretty kind of scary. You know, and they were very intimidating. She did actually get involved in some shoot 'em up in that one. And she wasn't the scariest person in the room in that situation. But she was pretty involved.
I was gonna say for a moment, Angelina Jolie.
You know, listen, my thought on Tom Cruise is it would take you a bunch of scenes to get past the fact that it's Tom Cruise.
Yes.
I think that's the same problem with Angelina Jolie. But I do think
she would actually be quite a good henchman, though. She'd
right.
sort of be sort of the good secondary villain. She could really camp it up.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we'd give her the job because she's already been in a Tomb Raider movie with Daniel Craig. And Daniel Craig would say, oh, I recommend Angelina Jolie for this work in the James Bond movie.
That's right. Was she aware that he was in that movie?
This was before he was James Bond.
I was going to say, well, their stars were at a different level at that stage.
Exactly. But if Daniel Craig was to call us now and say, you know, Atlantic Voice, I hear you're trying to fill out the villains for Forever Never Falls.
yep.
which is now starting to roll off my tongue. If he recommended Angelina Jolie, I would go, Daniel, yes, we will consider her for one of the secondary villain parts.
Yeah.
And then I would hang up and go, does he not realize that we've picked Connery to be in our movie?
That's right.
But other than that, no, I think Angelina Jolie, there's an edge to her. Yeah.
As long as we're casting henchmen, I do want to put in a vote for Michael Shannon as an updated version of Jaws.
Oh.
I don't know how many people see Michael Shannon. He's in the Boardwalk Empire, so that's on HBO. He was in that recent Messenger movie with Jason Gordon-Levitt. What's his
first Joseph name? Gordon-Levitt.
Right, Gordon-Levitt. And
he's in he looks a lot like
a slightly smaller version. He's still pretty big, but a slightly smaller version of Jaws.
All seriousness, I'm going to give a recommendation to people now. He was in this great independent movie from about 18 months ago called Take Shelter.
Mm-hmm.
Where he plays a guy who believes the world is going to end and no one else does. And so he's digging a hole in his garden. It sounds quite outlandish, but it's a terrific little movie. And he comes across as someone, the movie is great because you're not sure if he's crazy or not.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't know whether to believe him. And I don't want to give away what happens, but I see what you're saying. And of course, physically, he has that sort of square head and he's quite big and imposing. And you could easily see him grin and the metal teeth come out. You know something? Jaws is a popular character. He's never been killed off properly. Let's have him back. Jaws we're putting in forever never falls.
There
and Michael
go.
Shannon is our Jaws.
So, okay.
So those of you out there, if you'd like to apply for the lead villain position, just know that you need to be villainous and your chances go up if you're wearing an eye patch. We need some girls, obviously, to surround James Bond with. Who are your dream girls to be let's go this way around because I do know there's someone you want to talk about. Obviously, in any James Bond film, there are people back in the office who tell him what to do, and he ignores their instructions, but we see them every time. We have M, obviously, currently played by Judi Dench. I've always liked to see Patrick Stewart as M. Patrick Stewart from Star Trek Next Generation. He could say in that booming British voice, Bond, make it so. And you would go, and he just seems to me like someone who's in charge. He's already been a captain, so I would imagine that as he retired from space travel, he'd take up a job with the Secret Service. He's still in charge.
You British really like Star Trek The Next Generation.
We do. Yeah, we do, because it's all British people.
That's right.
Because they were cheap.
The one he's somewhat maybe too neat to be...
Or would it be a good villain?
You know, he might be a good villain. You know,
of course, he
also did, the X-Men movies. He's
professor.
And that sort of stuff. But even in all those things, he's a little bit clean-cut. I always think of M as being a little bit more rumpled around the edges.
Okay.
For M, I thought of now...
He's slightly too efficient.
It would take some training in accents because he's got the completely wrong accent, but Fred Thompson. Congressman here and former.
He's in Hunt for Red October.
Hunt for Red October. And
Russians don't take a dump without a plan.
I guess
that's his famous line. Yeah.
He did. He was one of the Law and Orders. I forget which one.
He was
in
Yats
for a while there
towards
the end of their main run. He was doing that sort of stuff. But he has that sort of rumpled but authoritative approach to things. And I think he'd be
I'm all for casting him. We're going to have to get rid of that, you know, South Carolina / Tennessee accent. But he's an actor. You put on an accent. So Patrick Stewart, I'm afraid we are not required. Fred Dalton Thompson, you're in. We need a Q and a Money Penny. Do you have anyone in mind for Money Penny? I do. Someone who I know you would like.
Well, I know you're pushing Zooey Deschanel to me.
You're a big fan.
Very big fan of Zooey Deschanel's in movies and TV. I put a plug as long as they're plugging things.
Well, I'll
plug The New Girl. I'm sure based on our plug on our podcast, the ratings will go through the roof. But a very funny actress. I do. She's so funny and quirky. I don't know how it would work. I think
she can't be the lead girl. But she has to be someone like Money Penny.
Yeah, and she's done some movies where she played, not Money Penny role is very serious, but she's played different things than just the quirky girl that she plays on the TV show. So I certainly think she could pull it off. I thought of another Money Penny, Gretchen Mol, who's a little older now. But, of course, Money Penny's an interesting character because she started as a young girl, a younger person who would have a potential relationship with James Bond, but then she stayed the same for so many years.
She ended up being James Bond's mother.
By the time we got to the end, so I'm not sure we're going for. But if we were going to go for a young one, of course, nobody actually has secretaries anymore. So I guess the new one doesn't even have a Money Penny, does it? I don't believe the Daniel Craig movies
have Money Penny. No, they don't have Money Penny.
Because, you know, with new automation and word processing and phone answering systems, you just don't need a secretary.
Yeah, I mean, apparently. People can answer their own emails.
Exactly.
Heck, you and I make a podcast from the basement. I don't want to hear that some boss needs a secretary.
Yep.
And obviously we need a queue. That could be all manner of people.
Yeah, you know, I didn't get the chance to think this one through too far. So
well, let's not worry too much about who queue is. I want to come back to the Bond girl is, but while we're on the office staff, why don't we jump? As we're talking about Q, Q needs to give James Bond some goodies. Is there anything over the years that you've loved about the films? And I remember saying in the last podcast that I fell in love with James Bond because he had a cool watch. That was the first gimmick I ever saw, and I thought it was the neatest thing. Out of the gadgets that he's had over the years, is there one we'd like to bring back, or is there something that you might like to see?
I mean, yeah, I don't know what I'd necessarily like to see. I mean, my thing about gadgets, the gadgets and these sort of things, is I would prefer if it has some element of plausibility to it.
Okay, so the invisible car is out the window.
The invisible car is definitely out the window. I will tell you, the watch, you know, that spins around so fast, it cuts through things.
Yeah, that was cool.
You know, maybe now you could do that, but typically I would not believe it. All the little things that shoot little blow darts out and things like that, and I think there was one where he had it in the sleeve, and I'm like, what, he walked around all day with a gun in his sleeve, and nobody noticed.
It was activated by nerve impulses.
That's right, all these sort of things. And, you know,
he kept shooting himself in the foot when he pulled up his fly, because every time he pulled up his zip, he shot himself in the foot.
Right, whenever he has something he can shoot out, and it goes 100 yards, and it grapples onto the top of the building, and it shoots into cement and holds him there, I go, no, now we're stretching things too far. My favorites are the ones, in fact, you know, there was an earlier version with, I think it was in Diamonds Are Forever, where Sean Connery is a James Bond, obviously, shot something that was sort of a grappling hook, but it was only like 10 feet out, and it really looked like something that you could fit a grappling, it looked like a flare pistol. I could buy that sort of thing, but when it turns into these little microscopic things that
you want your gadget to be kind of real.
Yeah,
you want
it the best gadget ever was not a James Bond gadget. It was a villain's gadget, which was the knife coming out of the shoe on Rosa Klebb, where she had the knife points that came out the tip of her shoes so she gets somebody. Yeah. Now, there is something, you could build that. You could make a sort of thing like that, and it would be a useful weapon to have knives on the tips of your shoes.
Yeah, no.
But so I like that sort of gadget.
Unless, you know how some people are lazy taking their shoes off and they use one foot.
Right. What happened there? I just took my heel off.
Well, it's funny.
You know, when you get the crazy gadgets and you put them in a car, I'm probably more forgiving. I mean, I don't want to have the smoke bombs and the oil slicks and the tacks coming out of the back.
Because where do you put your golf clubs?
Right, exactly. But a car can carry something bigger that does a bunch of different things. How about you?
I don't know. I mean, I do think I'd like to see. I do think the best gadgets are something that we all kind of think, ooh. Like the great thing about the watch was we've all got watches. So at a certain moment, there is an accessibility to it. Whereas an Aston Martin that does things, I'm never going to own an Aston Martin.
Right.
I would think out of all
the
technology.
The prices on that are very high.
Exactly, yes. And the insurance is going to be through the roof with the ejector seat and everything and the invisible one and the whole performance. I know we've done a whole show on cell phones. Some sort of cell phone that can do different things would be cool. But I guess, I don't know, is it very, all it can do is it ends up shooting something. And so shooting something, just the whole idea is a bit sort of, well, he shoots someone. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So again, I don't know nowadays, you know, people walking around with like, you know, coffee makers or a microwave oven that does things. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's all been done a bit.
Did you know what kind of phone he's going to have in Skyfall?
I'm going to guess it's a Sony.
It is a Sony. It's an Android phone.
Okay.
From a couple of weeks ago. He's more of a free spirit. He doesn't want to be constrained by this Apple software. And so he's got a Sony Android phone coming up in the new
day. This is how you live vicariously as James Bond through his choice of cell phone.
I'm going to buy a Sony right now.
So do you think then, because we touched a little bit on the cars, do we think, and again, the Aston Martin is great. But none of us can ever afford an Aston Martin. And definitely, if the pod doesn't get more listeners, there's really no chance of us ever buying Aston Martins.
Do you think
he should drive something more affordable?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, like he should just wear a suit from Sims, you know, instead of his Tom Ford tuxedo.
Sims is like an American Marks and Spencer's for those of you back in the UK. James Bond would not be doing deals to wear Marks. Although in real life, he would probably be wearing Marks and Spencer's because he's a government worker.
That's right. Well, you know, I assume he has some perks on the side.
Yeah, he must have. I don't know. Maybe he's ripped off all of Goldfinger's money. I don't know. So, no, we don't want him driving something that you and I could aspire to. He drove BMWs. Pierce Brosnan drove BMWs.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay. I mean, you know, not everybody can get a BMW, that's for sure.
No, that's true. But it is a bit more sort of accessible.
Yeah.
If it was an Aston Martin, I mean, you know, it's $500,000 in whatever currency.
I mean, it's got to be very competitive to get the endorsement deal to put him in a car. And in fact, I guess in a way, you know, I saw something about the level of product placement in the new movies. And I guess I'm sort of surprised that he's still in an Aston Martin. Is he in an Aston Martin, the new one? Or is he, or Audis? He's in Audis these days, isn't he?
I think so, yeah.
You know, so I was going to say, because the Aston Martin, it's not like by putting it in a movie, they're really going to increase their market share. Oh, I'm going to go on out there and buy an Aston Martin, but the other ones could. I wonder what America, you know, like, is it going to end up in a Cadillac CTSV or something like that at some
now,
point?
It's interesting, though, because you talk about the product placement, but over the years, there have been a lot of regular products, and I know you spoke to me beforehand about in one James Bond movie the Bond girl drove a Ford Mustang.
That's right, fastback. It was a very nice Mustang,
but an affordable car.
That was a Tiffany case.
And I do hear the story that in the latest James Bond, there's been a lot of uproar because he's going to be drinking Heineken beer. So again, I can afford that.
Even to the point where he had to comment, I don't know if you saw, it was in the news today saying that he was trying to defend the fact. Actually, he defended two things. One was he was saying that the new version of James Bond is a lager drinker. And okay. So that was okay. Of course, we were just over there. I didn't see a lot of people in Britain drinking Heineken, other than at the Olympics events where you were forced to drink Heineken. That was your only choice.
Well, maybe that was the deal they made for the Queen ripping off his parachute, yes, that everyone had to drink Heineken.
I don't want to ruin any of our sponsorship opportunities on Atlantic Voice, but yes. I don't picture Heineken as the beer that he'd be having. But he was defending it not only in terms of the character, but also the fact that it helps get the movie made. You know, well, like the amount of money that they're paying in is what gets you your special effects and things like that.
I want to digress for a moment. I'm actually not that offended by product placement in general, and it tends to happen a lot in action movies. I'm not the only time, and this is now a James Bond criticism, the only time I was upset was there's that great scene in Casino Royale where he and Vesper Lynn meet on the train, and she names his watch. And I just felt that was lazy product placement.
I have
no problem that he's wearing the whatever watch, but you don't need to say it because then it does seem a bit like a comedy show sketch. Like, let me have a Budweiser. It just seems a bit too over.
Well, and
I don't have a problem with it.
No,
it
I don't mind it. I find it's distracting. At times, not any distracting. Like, oh boy, I dislike the movie as a result, but when all the labels are placed a certain way, like when they come into a scene and the beer bottles and the soda cans and everything are facing just exactly the right way, unlike in your own home where you'd be like, I can't figure what's in the back of my refrigerator kind of thing. But it is kind of an interesting aspect of business.
I can't find my invisible beer. I shouldn't have bought the invisible beer. As you can tell, the invisible car doesn't get a lot of love from me. So we've got Sean Connery in Forever Never Falls. We have a... Do we have a title song from last week? I don't remember if we picked one.
You know, we were pretty non-committal. I think we have to do some more auditions.
I'm actually tempted to go back to U2 and Bono and The Edge and go, we'll give you another crack, but leave Tina Turner at the door. Come on in and see what you can do. I think they could produce a Rocky song for us.
If you can land them, I think we should take
it. Okay, so we've got U2 singing some version of Forever Never Falls. We don't have a Bond girl. We have a Bond villain. I think we're going with sort of a Morgan Freeman, maybe Eric Bana showing up. We've definitely cast this guy,
about
Michael
Fred Thompson.
Thompson Dalton, we've got his M. So we need a Bond girl. Who's our dream Bond girl? You mentioned, I know, we talked about Charlize Theron when we talked last week about who our Jane Bond might be.
Mm-hmm.
She would be a terrific Bond girl.
Well, you know, she would be a candidate for putting it in now. You know, since she wasn't able to get that role, maybe she'll compromise for that. I mean, the modern version of a James Bond girl has to be something a little different than it's always been. Although, you know, even back in some of the older movies, you know, there was it Holly Goodhead in Moonraker, who was a scientist.
Oh, we've got to give her a name. Oh, okay.
Well, no, I'm talking about some of the old ones. We'll get to our names. That's a whole other thing. But she was actually a scientist, right? I forget what she was doing, but she was running the laboratories and things like that. And there's some – and even in the George Lazenby one, the one that that Bond ends up marrying at the end, who then probably gets knocked off shortly after. She was
spoiler alert! If you haven't seen that one,
that's right. If you haven't seen the movie from 1971 or
69.
Okay, that
sorry to ruin it for you people.
But she played a very active type of character. She was involved in a lot of their battles and things, you know, fighting side by side with him, which I guess is what led to the marriage. But I think you would need a character like that. That's a long way of saying that the stereotype of a James Bond girl is just, you know, rolling around in bed and half naked and painted in gold, yeah, and those sort of things. But in fact, there were quite a few strong characters in the past. Certainly today, you would need a strong character.
The one thing I have noticed when you watch all the, when you sit down and watch all these movies and you are conscious of the fact that they're from a different time and almost a different place, and that the world was a different place, I do find it interesting how many of the Bond women were not famous before they became Bond, before they became a Bond girl. Like, mm-hmm. the famous one is Jane Seymour. Her first ever role, I think, was Live and Let Die, and then she tacked out a pretty good career as Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, mm-hmm. among other things. But it's interesting. They've always gone for almost an unknown face.
Certainly there's a cost element to it, you know, that they don't want to pay the top dollar for somebody and play off their recognition. I think they're more interested in folks who are more obscure than that.
Keeping it fresh.
I think so. Changing it up. And there's, I'm trying to remember, Kim Basinger was in that one that was the sort of knockoff one that Sean Connery came back for. And I can't remember how big a name she was at that point. But
that was Never Say Never Again.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Ooh, does that cause a problem for us litigiously with our Forever Never
Falls?
No. Fair enough.
it's different enough. I can understand why they go. It makes it more interesting to introduce somebody who's sort of...
All right, so we're actually going to go with someone fresh if we can find them. Yeah. We do need a story for this thing. I've done a bit of research. I found that when you watch 22 James Bond films, the villain is up to one of two things.
I found when you watch 22 Bond films, you end up very tired.
As an aside, I know out there, there are Bond fanatics like myself planning to watch all 22 before the 23rd one comes out. And they'll do it over a weekend and have to fight, you know, tiredness, constipation, all sorts of different things. There are two sorts of villainous plots. The villain has either stolen something that he's going to destroy the world with, mm-hmm. or he's got a lot of money and he's going to make more money. But this is always the interesting gimmick. He's never going to steal money. He's going to do something to everyone else's money that makes his money more valuable. That happened in Goldfinger, right, which was quite ingenious, because in the book of Goldfinger, Goldfinger is actually trying to steal it all. Mm-hmm. And actually, the movie Goldfinger comes up with actually an improvement on the book in that he has him making all the gold radioactive, so his own gold becomes more valuable.
Sure.
A View to a Kill was the same thing. GoldenEye was sort of the same thing.
And Quantum of Solace, right? He was cornering the market on water. Then he was going to do some damage to other supplies.
Do we need to... James Bond movies tend not to go into sort of highfalutin... They're not espionage thrillers in the way that there's, you know, assassinations and conspiracies. Mm-hmm. It tends to be villains trying to get rich or destroy everyone. It's one or the other.
Yeah.
So are we going to go?
Maybe both, if you can have that opportunity.
So destroy everyone and get rich at the same time.
Yeah.
So I guess
if you destroy everyone, you'll be the richest person in the world.
Right. So in our ultimate James Bond movie, then, we're going the whole way.
Yeah.
Our villain.
Anything he should corner the market on?
Apple products.
I was going to try to make a joke about the phones or something like that, but maybe Steve Jobs was an arch villain.
Maybe, yes. And James Bond secretly took him out in iPad of Dessert. Also, I don't know. I just made up a moronic James Bond movie name. So we're going to, in Forever Never Falls then, our villain is going to, he's going to steal something, blow everyone up, and in the process, take all the money.
Yeah.
So we're going the whole hog.
That's right. And usually when you're going to get all
our villain, things, Morgan Freeman, our villain.
No, yeah, we decide? We keep shifting around.
Morgan Freeman?
I don't know where we ended up on that. We'll take a vote. We'll take fan voting on the comment section of our website as the appropriate villain. But one of the things I wanted to mention in terms of these plot lines is that they almost always seem to be designed to take you a lot of different places. They needed this product, which they shipped from Hawaii, and they got this one, which is from the Australian Alps, and they got this part so that you can take the movie to all the different locations. And frankly, that is one of the neatest parts about all. Even the bad movies took you to lots of interesting environments. Now, there's a few older ones We were talking just before about one, which I've now forgotten which one of the early ones it was, where they're sitting around a pool playing cards towards the beginning of the...
Oh, that's Goldfinger.
Yeah, Goldfinger, where they're sitting there. And I thought, when I see that one, I don't know if that was a fancy pool at the time. I think it wasn't, because I've watched enough other movies again recently, and I go, they were fancy sets. This pool pretty much looks like a Holiday Inn somewhere in central Florida or something like that. And this is supposed to be the very fancy setting in which James Bond is meeting up the arch-villain.
And I now want to put, when we make our James Bond movie, we're going all out.
That's right.
The older James Bond movies are notorious, older movies in general, but it seems to happen a lot in the James Bond movies. They have very ropey back screen projection, right, where it seems very clear that what actually is happening on a studio and the screen behind us filming.
Driving the car and the same things reappear repeatedly behind the car. That's right.
I do know what you're talking about with that Miami set. So where are we going to send? Because it obviously needs to be somewhere we need to go as the movie's producers.
True, we are the producers.
Where do we want our villainous... Because I don't want it to happen in a suburb of Pittsburgh or Manchester. I really want it to happen somewhere exotic.
Yeah, let's not do anything in our countries of origin. I do think...
Do you want to go somewhere warm or somewhere cold?
I think, you know, in the modern era, if you want to go for super luxury, we might have to do some in the Dubai area or some of these, like, man-made islands or things like that are fancy. There's a resort setting. Okay. I don't think you'd want to set the whole movie there because, you know, there's oppression and horrible things that go on.
Yeah.
But very nice hotels. Very nice hotels.
Okay, yeah, I can do that.
So you go there.
They don't allow actually drinking or I think they do allow gambling, but they don't allow drinking, which is probably going to be a real problem for James Bond in our movie.
That could be his.
It could be a real problem.
And it's going to be a defiance of like having a Heineken in Saudi Arabia.
And from a business perspective, that's going to be a real problem for our product placement.
So we'll only spend a little bit of time there.
So we'll stop there for a little while.
Yeah.
Like a little layover.
Yeah. I mean, there always seems to be a skiing set, a lot of mountain settings, which I always kind of liked. I mean, you know, it's easy to go for the tropical island setting, but, you know, a skiing setting, that's always nice, you know, snow.
Maybe we... Before, in the pre-credit sequence, we can have an action sequence in Dubai, one of these places, in one of these modern buildings.
I'm going to have to take my funny car on a parachute.
Your funny car on a parachute. I remember now from the other week. Okay, so we're going somewhere cold for a little bit. We're going somewhere hot, but the desert. James Bond's always liked these sort of tropical islands. Do we want to try and wedge one of them in there?
Yeah, I think we have to. I'm trying to think.
Preferably somewhere tsunami-free.
That's right. It does seem like it should be...
Although that could be a villain's plot, but that was done by Superman. So
it's
got to
be exotic. I saw some... Where did I see something about in the Philippines? Some interesting resorts they put in there now, or some place that's unusual. I mean, you could do you mentioned we could do something in India, off the shore of India, or something that'd be different like that. It's not going to be a... It's not going to be a Hilton in Hawaii. It's got to be better than that.
You know what's amazing, though? And it speaks to the longevity of these films. Every place we've named, he's pretty much already been.
That's right. Yes, right.
And it's actually quite hard to think up somewhere where James Bond hasn't been that is actually quite exotic. He's been to the Caribbean a couple of times. He's been to Las Vegas, but that was 40 years ago. I think there might be some interesting action in a modern-day Las Vegas. But when I think of modern-day Las Vegas, I just think of the Austin Powers movie.
That's right.
Where he goes to Las Vegas.
And now in Las Vegas, I mean, nobody ever sets foot outdoors, basically.
Yeah.
Like, once upon a time, you could have something happen. In this case, it would be just... He goes down to the climate-controlled gambling room at the baccarat table and spends the night there playing.
NBC. So we have... We think we've put together our perfect James Bond movie. At least it's ours. We're bringing Sean Connery back, but I want a younger Sean Connery.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want him looking a little heavy. I don't want him clearly wearing a wig, a toupee. All due respect to Sean Connery. Forever Never Falls is the name of our film.
That's right.
We seem to have gone relatively gadget-free. We are going to do something with a phone or something. We're not sure about... We have the funny car. So
knives and shoes.
Knives and shoes. We want our gadgets to seem kind of real, so that's fair enough.
Did we pick a car, or are we going to...
We could pick a car. We've got a few minutes left. But in a weird way, it's almost sacrilege now that he drives anything other than an Aston Martin. If he's gonna drive something expensive, it might as well be an Aston Martin.
I think that's appropriate. It's my favorite. I mean, listen, I've had to choose one of the cars he's driven. It's going to be that car.
Yeah. So. Okay. So we're going to stick with the Aston Martin. We don't want to get into too much trouble. Did we? Did we ever actually pick a... We didn't pick an actress for our Bond girl, but did we give her a name?
Well, we were going to say Charlize Theron could have that job.
We're going to give her... Yeah.
Yeah, because of the fact she got passed over for Jane Bond.
So we're going to give her the job. We're going to break the rule about a no mark. Do we want to give her a funny name?
We could give her a name. I'm trying to think
you
of
have
any
a couple
that'll
of minutes
be,
now.
No, you know, it's got to be family friendly or something like that, or not family friendly as it might be. I will have to think about a name.
Okay, because there's been some whoppers. Obviously, Pussy Galore, or Pushy Galore. actually, though, that is, and I don't want to dwell on that for too long, but actually, when you watch that movie, everyone always does a Connery impression where they go Pushy.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, in the movie, he calls up Pussy.
it doesn't sound nearly as tough. It sounds less like Sean Connery.
But he's
Sean
not Connery. Doing that shh thing like he has a lisp.
Yeah, there was
Holly Goodhead.
Mm-hmm,
personally, I find that one probably pushing the edge more than the other one.
Tiffany Case, Plenty O'Toole.
Plenty O'Toole.
Was also in Diamonds. Well, they had Bambi and Thumper, but those were bad.
They were villainous.
Assassin
types.
We had Xenia Onatopp, Famke Janssen from GoldenEye.
GoldenEye, that's right, yeah.
I think since then they've played it pretty straight on the names.
I think they have.
It does seem to harken back to something from a different era that, like, ooh, if we have this name that has the dirty words in it or pseudo dirty words in it.
I would actually like our lady to have a name. Grace Jones was Mayday,
mm-hmm.
So it sounded sort of Bondish in that she wasn't called Deborah.
Right.
I mean, you know, her name was. And apologies to any Deborahs out there. Her name was Mayday. It wasn't crude and it wasn't too infantile, but it was sort of exotic and mm-hmm. slightly different. So maybe, I don't know, something I don't know. I don't know.
It's a long way to go to not know.
Yeah, you know, something maybe with a jewel in it, like pearl or jade or
emerald.
But something like that. But okay, so we're going to play it straight. Mm-hmm. We're not going to be, you know, making silly jokes.
Wink and nudge.
Well, we've got you two to sing our song.
That's right.
We think they could do a pretty bang up job of that. Our villain is, he's going for the whole hog. He's going to be stealing stuff to threaten the world,
and then he's
going to be taking the money. And we're going to be relatively gadget-free. I think we have a pretty good film once we get around to making it. Before we close, and we've spent two episodes now talking about James Bond and making a few jokes along the way, but I think it's pretty clear we kid because we love. You're looking forward to Skyfall, because that's why we're all here. It's 50 years of James Bond. It's pretty amazing that this movie series has lasted that long. I mean, there's six Star Wars movies, and to be honest with you, I think three of them suck. you know, Jaws has been done five or six times, and three or four of those were pretty terrible. Are you looking forward to Skyfall, or are you a bit nervous? Is there a part of you that thinks that maybe James Bond has run its course?
No, not in the new iteration. I think if I was to watch the movie side by side with the old ones and the new ones are really better overall movies, action movies and things like that. I mean, granted, it's taken a lot from the Bourne, you know, movies type of style of, you know, their battles and things like that. But, you know, from what I've heard in terms of advance feedback on this one, it's supposed to be very good. And people gave Quantum of Solace kind of a hard time for being a little too rough or something like that, but I quite liked it. I did like it. So I'll say this
for Daniel Craig: he is a very compelling. You know, people now. I've been seeing some of the advanced reviews for Skyfall, and people talk a lot about Christopher Nolan and the Batman franchise and how it has redefined these films. But whether that be true or not, that's a different discussion. But I find Daniel Craig, I still remember as a fan how much angst seemed to be out there when he was cast as James Bond. The whole website's dedicated to claiming why he wasn't James Bond. I think he's done a terrific job. He's a great actor, a compelling character, and he and everyone else involved have made them event movies again.
Sure. It's coming, and this one's the first one being released directly into IMAX as well as regular.
Wow. So I think it's the first one shot on digital, too.
Yeah.
So, for those of you, as we come to the end, Skyfall is coming soon. I have one little... Oh.
That we were supposed to talk out.
Oh,
over
we're
it
talking
now.
Out over it. This was the Atlantic Voice podcast. We spent two episodes talking about James Bond. We've had a lot of fun. The movie comes out October the 26th in the UK, November the 9th in the US of A. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care, buddy.
Take care. You have been listening to the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion. Follow us at atlanticvoice.net and also at mixcloud.com.